Support for NPR podcasts comes from 20th Century Fox Home Entertainment, presenting the Irish rock film Once on DVD Tuesday.
This podcast is a production of KCRW and KCRW.com Santa Monica. If you enjoy this program, check out KCRW.com for more than 20 additional programs that you can podcast.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that, but prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
This week on The Business, there's been a surge in Iraq, and a surge of Iraq movies here at home. It might be working in Baghdad, but it's tanking at the local Cineplex. We'll talk to the writer and director of In the Valley of Ella, Paul Haggis. Plus, a not very happy new year, or winter, or spring, for striking writers. But first, it's the Hollywood News Caravan. Stick around, it's The Business from NPR. So, how bad have things gotten between Hollywood's producers and the striking writers? Well, a recent communique from the Writers Guild East president, Michael Winship, about the studios began, quote, "They lie. And then they lie again. And then they lie some more," unquote. More on the strike a little later in the show. Elsewhere, is the Chinese government blocking American film imports? MPAA Chairman and CEO Dan Glickman thinks so, as do the feds. Last week, U.S. Commerce Department officials, quote, forcefully told China that Washington does not consider it acceptable to suspend the showing of American-made movies. Yes, with the Chinese already doing such an admirable job of stemming the flow of poisoned pet food, lethal toothpaste, and deadly toys, we'd hate to see what a strong and legitimate film distribution market might look like. Finally, Hollywood said goodbye to Freddie Fields last week. You might not know that name, but before Geffen and Ovitz, Fields was the original most powerful man in Hollywood. A charismatic talent manager and agent who went on to become a studio executive and producer, Fields pioneered something called first dollar gross, wherein big stars get a percentage of a film's profits. Fields died last Tuesday of lung cancer at his home in Beverly Hills at the age of 84. Having unleashed first-dollar gross deals on the studios, Hollywood may only outlive him by a few years. And that's the Hollywood News Caravan. Coming up later in the show, movies about the Iraq War are proving about as popular as the war itself. But next, a writer's strike update. You're listening to The Business from NPR. Weekend before last, it seemed like there might be a happy Hanukkah in Hollywood after all. The producers produced what was supposed to be a new proposal. The rhetoric seemed to cool down a bit, and both sides returned to the bargaining table. But it couldn't last. To get a sense of where we're at, our producer Matt Holzman spoke with Cynthia Littleton, deputy editor of Variety.
All right, Cynthia, so what the hell?
Yeah. It is unbelievable. The level of pettiness and tit for tat. So where we're at now is now we have the specter of the Directors Guild, which is also due to start talks on a contract that ends in the middle of next year.
And how does that affect the writers?
Very much so. The Directors Guild now has more leverage than it has ever had in its 70-odd years, because you can't underestimate how much the studios really loathe the Writers Guild leadership. They think they're communists. They think they're grenade-throwing anarchists. And the Directors Guild leadership are old-line, old-school insiders. It's going to be a much more cordial negotiation than it is with the Writers Guild. And you're going to see the studios sit down with, and this is a prediction not based on anything, but reading the situation, studios are going to sit down with a much sweeter deal for the directors, and the message to the writers will be, see, look what we'll do with reasonable people who play politely.
And then the actors, right after that, there's another negotiation that's going to go
on.
Well,
see, I just got off the phone with somebody who said, you know, the worst nightmare is that the WGA, you know, continues to dig its trench, and then boom, come March, April, and the industry further seizes up in anticipation of an actor's strike, and then all of a sudden, the Actors Guild, with its 120,000 members, has a lot more clout and is calling the shots even more so than the writers.
we keep talking about the producers and the studios and the AMPTP who is negotiating these contracts, and I don't really know who these people are.
It's a bargaining unit. I mean, it's no different than, you know, the auto industry has a kind of umbrella organization that bargains for GM and Chrysler and Ford. It's a collective bargaining unit, just as the Writers Guild of America is.
So the AMPTP is basically the studios, more or less. That is who it is. So
yeah, it's the major studios and major production companies. Lionsgate is a member of the AMPTP. You know, anybody of sizable production entity in the entertainment business thing.
But what about when you think they say producers? Is Jerry Bruckheimer? He's a producer. Is he a member of the AMPTP?
No. No, these are the bankroller type companies. These are the studios and a handful of sizable independents. And the studios are very upset that the Writers Guild is trying to sort of wrap itself in a blue collar tint, because they're saying it's not accurate and it is swaying the feelings of the public and swaying the feelings of members of the guild to think that they are, you know, the oppressed. So there's a big gap between the big perception gap is one of the biggest issues.
You mentioned swinging public opinion. What has been very interesting about that is that whereas I get 10 emails a day from the Writers Guild, I get nothing from the AMPTP. And not only that, they have refused to have someone come on our show repeatedly. We also hear that they now have hired Chris Lehane and Mark Fabiani, who are two of Clinton's major spinmeisters, to come work for them, not as negotiators, because they're not negotiators,
yeah,
but to be as spinmeisters. So are they starting to realize that their public impression is just unworkable?
Yes, absolutely. That is very much why the AMPTP and the studios are starting to really ramp up a public relations counterattack, because it's very hard for them to fight against the visuals of writers on strike on the picket lines, you know, talking about how they need these residuals to make their mortgage payments. And the AMPTP is really, the dominant forces of the AMPTP are seven major CEOs who, as we all know, are very well compensated. But they have, what they are doing, they've hired some PR people to really pick apart the Writers Guild argument, trying to really speak to the elite members of the Writers Guild, the ones the networks and studios care about most. The, you know, showrunners, the top showrunners in town that run, you know, Desperate Housewives and Two and a Half Men and new shows that are floundering now because they've been shut down at the, you know, in their infancy. They don't care about organizing the people on American Idol. They just want a good deal for the internet, and they want, at this point, they really want to go back to work.
Last two questions. So what does it mean for the upcoming TV season, and what does it mean for films in the future?
All I know is I'm going to probably have to wait even longer for Lost to come back, which is really pissing me off. It means nothing good for the television business. The new shows that were just in their infancy, just into like episode 5 and 6, which is a delicate time for any television show, were just shut down. You're definitely going to see a lot more reality, a lot of specials. You'll see a lot of news magazines on the air between January and March. Even in the best case scenario, if there was a miracle breakthrough and they did a deal, you know, next week, it would still take quite a bit to ramp up and get, you know, get new episodes in production for, you know, you probably wouldn't see anything new till March. The longer this goes on, the industry has pretty much written off this season. This is going to be the season in the Nielsen record books with a big asterisk on it, because it was totally interrupted.
And the movie business?
Movie business is definitely starting to feel it. You know, the film side of the town was a little bit cocky and was saying, oh, we've stockpiled, we got tons of stuff, we're not going to be affected by this. But, you know, you get into pre-production and you start to get ready to where you're going to have the cameras roll and the star reads the script and says, you know what, this needs some tightening or this needs some work. Already Brad Pitt bailed out of a very high-profile movie called State of Play at Universal because he didn't like the script and it was about to go before the cameras and there was no rewrite that he could count on any time soon. And so he just, you know, he just bailed, and they actually replaced him pretty quickly with Russell Crowe. But, you know, they've pushed the follow-up to Da Vinci Code called Angels and Demons. It costs the studios money to push projects, you know, delay them, but it costs them a lot more if you're actually up and running in front of the cameras and you've gotten, you know, a week of shooting and you realize, oh, man, you know, we got to shut down.
Cynthia Littleton is deputy editor of Variety. Cynthia, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Thanks, Matt.
A postscript. The strike is not only likely to change what we see on TV, but the business of TV as well. Most networks usually order 20 or 30 pilots out of more than 100 scripts that are sold. Then they order about a quarter of those 20 or 30 for actual production. At a cost of $5 million per, producing all those pilots, most of which never make it to your living room, has become a major drag on the media conglomerate's bottom lines. So, in a major departure from business as usual, NBC has started to experiment by leapfrogging the pilot process, ordering half a season's worth of three scripted series so far. In other fallout from the strike, the $9 billion ad sales derby known as the upfronts may be canceled next year. And it may not come back. Instead of the lavish stage presentations and parties thrown for advertisers, in the future, the network people may take their dog and pony show on the road to ad buyers like Walmart, Procter & Gamble, and Ford. As they say in TV, stay tuned. There's no end in sight for the battle between the writers and the studios. Oh, and that other war is still going on too, you know, the one in Iraq. Perhaps not surprisingly, the slew of features that have appeared this year about the war have proved as popular with the American public as the war itself. Some, like Lions for Lambs and Rendition, have underperformed. Others, like Home of the Brave and Redactive, have bombed, pun intended. And Badland and Grace is Gone limped into theaters just recently. At least three more Iraq-related movies are in production. Although war movies have always been a Hollywood staple, this is the first war where movies critical of the war have come out during the war. Which may prove the old adage, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. How did the studios so badly misjudge the public's interest in the subject? And why have films with critical acclaim and big stars not done at least a little better? We decided to put those tough questions to Paul Haggis, the writer and director of In the Valley of Ella, starring Tommy Lee Jones and Charlize Theron.
I'm scared.
Something happened, Dad. Something bad.
Hello?
Sir, I'm calling about your son.
My son's in Iraq.
Your son was in Iraq, sir. His unit arrived stateside 4 days ago.
Anything you want to tell me? Why can't I go with you?
He's holed up someplace celebrating. Last thing he needs is his mother walking in on him.
I don't want to seem like I'm not concerned, but I expect your son will come stumbling in any time.
Sir, I regret to inform you that a body was found last night.
Paul Haggis wrote and directed Crash, which won the Oscar for Best Picture in 2004. He also adapted Million Dollar Baby for Clint Eastwood and collaborated on both Flags of Our Fathers and Letters from Iwo Jima. Matt Holzman spoke with Mr. Haggis from our studios in Santa Monica.
Paul Haggis, thank you for walking off the strike line for an hour to talk with us.
Thanks for having me.
I want to just talk about the genesis of In the Valley of Ella, when you first got the idea from the movie and how it made it from there to the screen.
It was 2003, and I was, like a lot of people, concerned about what was happening. And so I found some articles online, or actually some video online that I found truly disturbing. There was little video clips that our troops were shooting, but there's one I found very disturbing. It was a young kid shooting it, 18, 19 years old, member of the military. And first of all, the stuff that you need to see in most of these things that, you know, kids love, you know, bombs blowing up buildings and tanks roaring by. And then there was a shot of this kid with his arm around a completely burnt corpse, sort of just posing with it, goofing, you know. And then there was more jets going by and bombs going off and heavy weaponry fired. And then there was a body on the ground, a man who'd obviously been hit by quite a large round because it was in pieces. And another one of the kids picked up a hand and waved it at the camera. And I said, my God, what's happening? And if I started looking for something, and it was about in May of 2004 that I read Mark Bull's article about this father who went searching for his son. Mark was a reporter who was embedded in Baghdad and then came back and investigated this story. And so I knew that was my way in.
So just to point out for those who haven't seen the film, those video clips.
Which is actually everyone, I think.
Yeah, I have. Okay. I'm proud to say that I have. And we'll talk about that in a bit. But those video clips make it into the film and are a very impactful part of the narrative. Once you had the idea for the film, did you then just write a script?
No. I had to get the life rights, and to do that, I had to raise some money. So I took it to studios, and my agents warned me that I would never ever get this sold. It was May 2004, and you remember here in Santa Monica, we were still driving around. Every second car had a flag, flying from it, or a bumper sticker said "Support our troops," which truly just meant support the war. So I in Hollywood, they kill you with yeses. So I went, took it around to all the studios, and Crash was just about to come out, and they'd heard good things they said, and we really wanted to be in business with the, yes, we really want to do this, and let's set it here, or let's talk to this person, and let's set it up with this person. And it was just like 8 months of meetings, and nothing was ever going to happen. So I called Clint Eastwood because I can do that now. Isn't that cool? How cool is that?
I can call him too. He just doesn't take my call.
And I asked him to read the article, fully expecting him to say, you call me bastard, never call me back again.
Right.
And he read it and said, wow, that's really tough material. And I said, yeah, but I think it's the truth of what's happening to some of our men and women. He said, yeah, so I'll help you get it made. So he called over to Alan Horn at Warner Brothers, the chairman, and asked him to look at it. And because of that, Warner's bought the underlying rights to me, and I was able to write the screenplay.
And where did the bulk of the financing for the film actually come from?
That came from Patrick Waxberger and Steve Samuels and Summit and Samuels Media who put the money up, and then Warner's.
These are independent film financing.
All independent. Yeah, when we went to do it, it was. It's not the kind of film that you would normally think a studio would do anyways. And it was Warner Independent had agreed to release it, but we had to get the financing, and we did. And Nala put money in, and we cobbled it together from three sources. And really, those are the guys who took the risks on there because this isn't exactly the type of thing that people storm down up to the box office and demand tickets.
Right.
I
must see it now.
Exactly.
So I understand, not to take anything away from you, because obviously you're the writer and director of a best picture, Crash, but I understand how a call from Clint Eastwood could convince Warners to distribute the film. I don't understand why these independent financiers, knowing the financial risk that they were putting themselves into, why they decided to make the film.
Yeah, I don't know why they would do it either. I'm really, really glad they did. Well, the film's doing very well internationally. It just opened in France and Italy. It's the number one film in Italy last weekend because, I think French and Italians love to feel morally superior to Americans.
Right.
And everyone likes to point the finger at someone else, including us. So,
But did these people, when you were having the meetings with them, did the financial ramifications of such a film, did that come up in the conversation?
No, they just really believed in the material and were very brave individuals and put the money up and did it.
Was there a sense maybe in the back of their minds that since this movie, which is about the Iraq War, is a mystery? I mean, it is. That's the genre.
Yes, exactly.
That maybe, hey, well, it'll overcome its.
Well, that's what we tried to do. We tried to take something that was really take some really troubling questions and put it square in the center of popular entertainment, so that people could come, and go, oh, I like Tommy Lee Jones, I like Charlize and Susan Sarandon, all terrific actors. I'll go see this murder mystery, and then Hopefully you give them a fulfilling dramatic experience. But in there, you ask some really troubling questions, hopefully.
But why not go the allegory route? Why not make MASH, which was about the Korean War but was really about the Vietnam War, which is still going on?
Yeah, I think we're just too damn thick anymore to understand allegories. It's they're too easily dismissible. We look at the ones I participated in Flags of Our Fathers and Letters from Iwo Jima and thought those were really terrific movies and very brave on Clint Eastwood's part. But sometimes you just need to address exactly what's going on.
After a short break, more with Paul Haggis, the writer and director of In the Valley of Ella. Despite its Oscar-winning writer-director and big-name cast, it's performed poorly at the box office, like the rest of many Iraq-themed films that have come out this year. You're listening to The Business from NPR. You're listening to The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. War stories, even serious, critical war stories, are a staple of American movie making. But Iraq is the first time films critical of a war are coming out before the war is anything like over. At least 7 features have been released in the past 12 months dealing with the war or its impact on the men and women who fought in it, and none have accomplished their mission at the box office. At least 3 more are in production. Matt Holzman spoke to Paul Haggis, writer-director of the Iraq-themed In the Valley of Ella.
The crime scene boys knew what they were doing. They'd found traces of blood.
I need to see his quarters.
You mind if I take this?
You want the media?
Right now!
Every second we lose in this investigation...
But didn't you just say that you would do whatever you were told?
I think you know what the right thing to do is.
You haven't seen that soldier in here?
Yeah, they were here.
You do no question the witnesses.
Figured somebody should.
Why don't you just tell me what happened?
It's complicated.
Find out why they lied.
It must be frustrating being surrounded by incompetent fools.
I'm not the only one who made a deal.
If somebody comes running at you, you kill him.
You have no idea what we did over there. It's his voice on the video.
What video?
You're not stopped. Beat up!
His last film, Crash, was the Dark Horse winner of the Oscar for Best Picture in 2004 and went on to make beaucoup bucks. In the Valley of Ella has yet to even recoup its bucks.
Do you think that part of your making this film comes out of your liberal guilt and that feeling, whether it be liberal guilt or a sense of justice or whatever, is at odds with both your kind of true creative instinct and the business instinct that as a filmmaker you cannot deny?
Well, I don't think it's liberal guilt because I don't feel guilty. I do feel responsible because I think that those men and women who are over there...
This is the Catholic version of...
It is.
It's just guilt, but you can go on.
Okay. I think those men and women who are over there right now are there in my name as much as they're in anyone's name. The fact that I was protesting against the war in the first week doesn't take me off the hook. I didn't do enough, obviously, or some others who didn't do enough. And so it's not, I mean, they're representing us as Americans. So of course I feel responsible.
But the question is, does that sense of responsibility, is that at odds in some way with your responsibilities as both, not as a filmmaker.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But I mean, you look at, was it wise to make Battle of Algiers or any of these films? I think they have a life and they eventually make money. This one, I think, will make money overseas and eventually will make money on DVD and the finances will get their films back. Of course, you want to do this because of the success of Crash, largely because of Clint Eastwood, but because of the success of Crash when it came time to finance this film, people say, well, we didn't understand that movie. And it made money. Well, we don't understand this one. Maybe it'll make money too. And so now they'll look at it and go, well, we didn't understand that one. It didn't make money. We're not going to make his next one, or might not. So yeah, you take big risks in this, but you go in knowing that.
It's interesting that the fact that nobody knows anything about Hollywood, nobody knows what will make money, allows good films to be made in a way.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Do you think it's a little unfair? These movies are all very different in their tone, their real subject matter. Do you think it's fair to say they're Iraq movies? Is that
no.
Or even it's not fair, is that the problem with them that the American that the public sees them as that and they dismiss them easily that way?
It is hard when you're making films and they're sort of glommed together as all the same film. I look at mine as an American tragedy, and it's more of a Western than anything else.
Right,
it happens to have small video clips about Iraq in it. I mean, it is the person's come back from Iraq and they're searching, and it is the subject matter is Iraq, but others, take place, like Rendition, take place out of there and are very heavily... pointing out the fact that the troops are the responsible, and I decided that it was just too easy.
As you were making this film, certainly other films on the subject were coming out and not doing particularly well. Was that affecting what was going on in your head at all?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is that a
I've only
question?
Made 2 movies. I've only directed 2 movies, and you don't do them because the audience is ready for them. Or the audience isn't ready, or the audience will come or won't come. You do them because you get
or
this,
you don't. But,
I don't, exactly. Yeah. I don't because you get these questions that are gnawing at you that you have to get out.
But come on, at some point you picked up Variety and saw that a certain film was tanking, and you thought to yourself, oh God.
I think it was too late by then. Okay, we were committed.
That's
good. Also, I think we were the first one out in this. We came out quite early. We came out in September. So there was not the very first one, but I think there was the one last year.
But clearly, I mean, one of the issues is that the mood of the country changed dramatically. Whereas you're saying when you decided to make the movie, although it was very rah-rah, people weren't, quote-unquote, sick of the war. And right now, it's not about being for or against. It's just people just don't want to deal.
Yeah. I mean, it's a hard time. I don't know. No, you'd have to ask those people why they didn't come. They have to go across America why didn't you come?
I mean, in your opinion?
Is it a matter of marketing? Is it a matter of the way we're selling these movies? Or is it a matter of the subject matter itself?
Well, in yours, what's your thesis?
I don't know.
Because it's interesting. In my mind, I can make the argument that some of the films in the genre have not been top-notch and that the person's feeling and desire to make a point overwhelmed their ability to make a film that, in my opinion, my very humble opinion, were really top-notch films. Mm. This is a very fine film. So it's not the filmmaking, so it's got to be the marketing of the subject or a combination of the above.
Yeah. Or the fact there's a lot of films that came out. They're terrific films, good dramas at the same time. I mean, a lot of the dramas that weren't Iraq dramas suffered the same fate.
Do you think that once we've extricated ourselves from Iraq someday in a hopeful future, that people will rediscover your film and others like it, that it will be easier for them once they are not in it?
Someone said to me a few weeks ago, it's a little like asking someone to talk about their scars. It's difficult, but they can do it. Talk about their open wound. Talk about a wound in their chest that's bleeding, and it's that much more difficult. They don't want to sit around and chat. So yeah, obviously it's easier to make a film 5-10 years after the fact, and because we can distance ourselves at least in that way, and we can say it wasn't actually our decision, or it was our generation before us or something. It's very hard when you're right in the middle of it.
But then, is it a misguided notion? I mean, if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one there to hear it, you have these questions that you wanted to deal with.
Yeah.
Is it better to have posed those questions at a time than people were willing and able to?
No, it'd be too late then, wouldn't it? I mean, you have to do it now. You just have to do it now. And then you have to get people to see it.
It's a conundrum, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Complete conundrum.
Well, here's a tough question for you. The fact that these films have not done well may very well impact the ability of people to make them down the line when the questions still need to be asked.
That I do think about. Yeah.
And it doesn't
feel good. That's why you want the film to make a little more money so that people could, maybe we'll make it for less, the budget a little lessened. I mean,
but was that an issue when you made this film? Did you think, let's try to keep the cost down?
No. We did keep the cost down, and we did come in under budget, and all the actors did it for a pittance. And we knew that you do a passion piece, those are the rules. But I didn't expect it to have an effect on movies that are coming out in the future, and I think it will. If we don't support the films now, we're not going to get really good dramas in the future about this. And I don't mean my film in particular, but Lions for Lambs and a rendition of these other films. We need to support them.
But it sounds like, I mean, at this point, you would have made this film the way you made it when you made it.
Yeah.
Give it everything you know at this point.
Yeah, wouldn't change a thing.
Well, Paul Haggis was a very established TV writer before he wrote and directed Crash, which won the Oscar for Best Picture of 2004. He went on to write or co-write Clint Eastwood's Million Dollar Baby and Flags of Our Fathers. His latest film is In the Valley of Ella, starring Tommy Lee Jones and Charlize Theron. It's back in theaters in L.A. at the Lemley Music Hall in Town Center 5 for a very limited engagement. It's free for Academy and Guild voters, so
yes.
I encourage them to go. And anyone with a current military ID will also be let in for free. Paul Haggis, thank you for joining us on the
Thank you for having me.
And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Our associate producer is Darby Maloney. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the TL Type S with a 286-horsepower V6 and real-time traffic alerts. Learn more at Acura.com.